Eric Danziger liked spending late hours at the university. The desk lamp tossed gold light across the granite lab tables, as if splashed out from a miner's pan. Hundreds of skulls observed from shelves. A man just didn't get atmosphere like this in his stuffy little Bronx apartment. It was also neater than his home, which was covered wall to wall with rock and roll memorabilia. Freaky Tuner was a shareware program that played notes to tune virtually any instrument. He went through the same motions, smiling bemusedly at the skull upon the stuffing in the little box Anya had delivered. It seemed to approve of the musical break.
Wonder what kind of music you listen to. I bet if you had ears, you'd bow and worship to Keith Richards, too.
On the other hand, it was an infant skull. Best save the rock and roll a few more years. The professor had taken dozens of photographs of the skull's interior. The computer was cobbling them all together as he waited. He found it amazing that the program could piece photos together without overlapping. The interior map was about 50% complete. The gold lining the skull sutures sparkled after a soft polishing with a little water, some ammonia, and dishwashing soap. Though he couldn't guess at the original date without proper dating equipment, he did have a good idea that the gold had been added later. Certainly, the thing hadn't been born that way. It was very common to find altered artifacts, especially those of unknown origin. He wondered if it was too late to call Anya to come take a look at the interior map. A woman like her probably had an insane schedule. Darting from dig to dig, hosting a television show, writing books, and appearing on Letterman. Yeah, he'd like it if she could find a place for him to at least guest as a researcher on the show. He didn't mind the spotlight at all. And if it meant he could meet Christy Chatham, well then. It was almost 10. Anya was likely still awake, but he'd wait until morning. The music wanted his attention. His rubber-soled running shoes made no sound on the old tiled floor in Skirmerhorn Hall. It was dark, save for a few lights toward the end of the hall, two coming from consecutive doorways, another across the hall from the first. Ravenscroft's orders had been clear. He'd likely find this strange skull in the anthropology building. He'd found a name of a teacher associated with the TV chick and had tracked his teaching schedule. The building should be empty of students as well as professors, especially with the holiday weekend. But Jones had been given the all-clear to take matters into hand should he run into anyone wanting to ask questions. Sliding his leather-gloved fingers inside his jacket, Jones drew them the length of the knife tucked inside a narrow pocket. Stopping at the first door on the left, he read the syllabus taped outside the wall. It was signed by Professor Danziger.
Bingo. Professor Danziger?
He entered the quiet room. A bright lamp beamed over a lab table. A computer, textbooks, and various tools and papers scattered messily across the stretch. And a skull, sitting there on an open box with tufts of wool cradling the small cranium. Ravenscroft had said he might need to mention a woman's name.
I was given your name by Anya Creed.
The professor removed his glasses and set them on the countertop. An acoustic guitar lay on the table before him, the neck propped by a textbook.
Yes, I know Miss Creed. And you are...
Jones. Bill Jones. I'm a colleague of Miss Creed's. Ah, I see you've got the skull. Anya and I are eager to learn what you've discovered about it.
Yes, well, the interior mapping isn't finished. As for the date, I'd give it a good millennium. Perhaps. I'm no expert, more a fascinated learner.
That's intriguing.
Jones moved to the professor's side. When the man straightened and looked him over, he placed a gentle palm to his shoulder.
Looks like just another skull. What's so special about this one?
He felt the man's muscles tighten under his testing touch.
How did you say you know Anya? She didn't mention...
Oh, I'm surprised she didn't mention me, but then Anya's always so busy.
Yes, with her show.
I'll bring it back to her.
But I said I'm not finished yet. Maybe I should give Anya a call.
Oh, sure, certainly. You play, Professor?
Since I was a boy. You like guitar music?
Jones picked up one of the thicker, bronze-wrapped strings and unwound it curiously.
Music is not one of my talents.
No, you don't need to be able to play to appreciate. Yeah, I've got a phone in the office. If you'll just give me a minute, I can...
The wire dug into flesh. Jones pulled hard, sawing it slightly until he smelled blood. Jones stepped back, dragging his feet from under the professor's sprawled limbs, and dropped the bloody string across Danziger's chest.
Leather pants and a leopard print shirt? What kind of professor dresses like that?
Dismissing the thought, Jones bent forward, bringing himself eye level with the skull.
Kind of ugly, if you ask me. But is that gold?
He grabbed the skull, and when it wouldn't fit inside his pocket, he tucked it in the box filled with woolly stuff.
Wait!
Anya rushed ahead of Garin's long strides down the hallway of the Skirmerhorn building. She pressed a hand to his shoulder, feeling the resistance in his straining muscles. He was in too big a hurry for this to feel right.
Look at me.
He tilted his head and met her gaze. Dark, emotionless eyes. Not at all kind, as he'd seemed earlier at his penthouse. That's what Anya was afraid of. The man tended to alter his alliances faster than she could blink.
Tell me this isn't a trick. That as soon as you see the skull, you're not going to push me out a window and take off with the thing.
I would never push you out a window, Anya.
Yeah? Not unless it served your purposes. Just tell me the truth. Right now. I already know what the answer is, but I want to hear it from you.
He pressed his knuckles to his hips, widening his stance, and his gaze didn't get any less fierce.
You think you know me? You think I'll harm anyone, kill, to get what I desire?
I do.
Garin tilted his head. Then, swiping a palm over his mouth, he shook his head.
Isn't everyone out to protect number one? Since you've come into my world, Anya, the game has changed. I have uncertainties. I want to make them certain once again.
Then why not go after the sword?
Because I like you, Anya, believe it or not. And as you are aware, the sword is not an attainable goal. So until you hand it to me with blessings and tied with a bow, then I've got to resort to other means.
He just, in a roundabout way, confirmed her suspicions. He was after the skull. Though what it could do for him was beyond her imagining, if it possessed power. His story about 15th century Spain was believable enough, but really he had no proof. It had killed. Didn't sound like a giver of all good things to her. Besides, what Garin didn't have, he could buy. Unless good things somehow meant giving him access to her sword, in which case she should and would fight to the finish for this skull. Swinging about, she took the lead down the hallway. With Garin hot on her heels, she couldn't reach the anthropology lab fast enough. She was going to lead him directly to the skull. She'd known from the moment he pulled her from the grave he possessed ulterior motives. The lab door was open. Anya's heart dropped to her gut. The room was empty, but the light was on over the professor's work table.
Professor?
Anya didn't track the room for the skull. Garin prowled in behind her. He would do that search.
Oh, hell.
An arm stretched across the floor behind the freestanding counter. Blood spattered the professor's face and the front of his leopard print shirt. It had begun to pool beside his cheek and shoulder.
He's dead.
You think?
Anya burned him with a glance. He put up his palms.
Sorry. Is he still warm?
Anya bowed her head and pressed her open palm to the professor's cheek.
Yes?
She hadn't known him all that well, but had considered him a friend. A tear trickled down the side of her nose. At once, it felt right. A small gesture for the man's lost life, yet it felt stupid to show emotion in front of Garin. Using that complex twist of battling emotions, Anya was able to look over the professor's body for clues, but cautioned herself not to touch him or any of his clothes. Didn't want to leave fingerprints. A bloody guitar string and the dark maroon line around his neck answered the method of death question.
Wonder how long he's been like this.
There had been no other lights on in the surrounding classrooms. This wing of the hall was empty. She had to report this. She'd call Bart. much wiser than alerting campus security, who wouldn't know her history of always showing up at a crime scene at the wrong time.
It's not in here. Was it in a case of some kind?
Back off, will you?
You knew him well?
He was a friend. Not close, but he deserves respect.
You can go to his funeral. Right now, we are in a race to find that thing before the Bone Conjurer starts to use it. You can be sure that's who took the thing.
That made sense. The professor wasn't dead for no reason. The skull had been the motivation. Sergei had some kind of power both Garin and Rue were in awe of. Anya twisted to study the path from the professor to the door. There were no bloody shoe tracks. And as for picking up a shoe print, she had probably walked over the murderer's tracks.
He's still warm, so Sergei couldn't be too far ahead of us. Wait, what's this?
She stood, being careful not to step in blood or on the professor's leg, and took a step toward the computer on the table. A completion bar superimposed over a screen-wide picture showed 100%. Anya slid the mouse and the bar disappeared.
It's the inside. A map of the interior.
Anya.
What?
Without pulling her attention from the screen, Anya tapped the mouse to copy the file to the USB flash drive plugged into the side of the computer. Garin leaned in close, so she had to meet his eyes.
Dead body? Scene of the crime? We need to get out of here now.
Let me copy this first.
We don't have time.
Garin, chill. It's not as if there are a lot of people here so late at night.
What about the janitor?
From my experience with labs and classrooms, it can be days before a janitor shows to clean. Professor Danziger might be on the floor for days. Oh, that's so wrong. I have to call Bart right away, or the professor could seriously be here for days before he's found.
Bart?
NYPD detective. A friend of mine.
Great. Give us 5 minutes to clear the scene, will you?
Garin, with one last sweep of the room, strode out. Anya grabbed the flash drive, tucked it in the front pocket of her pants, and followed. This was personal now. She didn't know what Sergei could do with a skull like that, but it didn't matter. He wasn't going to get away with Professor Danziger's murder. She flipped open her cell phone and dialed Bart as Garin stalked outside into the dark night. Bart didn't answer, so she left another guess what, I found another dead body message for him.
You know what I don't buy about this whole Knights Templar legend of the skull?
Anya sat on the passenger side of Garin's black Escalade. They'd driven it to the college and now cruised around the building, scouting the periphery.
What's that?
Well, there's the cross patee on the gold sutures. A symbol we know the Templars used, so obviously that makes the skull the actual skull, yes?
Yes and no. The gold could have been put on later.
Exactly. And this could be any old skull. Because I don't buy that the skull and crossbones symbol began with the Templars.
Why not?
When I researched the skull of Sidon, it stated the child's skull was found atop the Maracleian woman's crossed thigh bones, which instigated the skull and crossbones imagery. It just spread from there.
That's what I told you as well.
But why, if the knights took vows of chastity and were all about doing good, would they then adopt a symbol that celebrates necrophilia? It makes little sense. Hey guys, one of our own did something nasty with a dead chick. Let's take that imagery and use it on our flags and tabards and let the whole world know we approve.
They weren't as wholesome as history tells, Anya.
I know that. I've read about Freemasonry, the devil worshipping.
Head worshipping, actually.
What's that about?
It was said the Knights Templar worshipped a severed head. Theories place it as the severed head of John the Baptist, which leads to theories of the Holy Grail actually being the tray upon which his head was carried to Salome.
Interesting. And yet another Grail legend attached to the Templars. There can be only one, and I don't think any of them are correct. But for argument's sake, and if we go with the head worshipping, it could have been our skull? That's a head, partially.
Who knows? Though some theories do place the Maracleian woman as a symbol of a virgin birth, while the Lord of Sidon was a pirate, which ties the Grail and the skull and crossbones together nicely.
Anya tracked the passing sidewalk for signs of Sergei.
Nicely? I don't know about that. Eerily, more like. You ever have any dealings with the Templars?
Before my time.
But there have been many recreations of the organization.
You have an interesting way of putting things, Creed. Do you see anything that side of the building?
He's not on the property anymore. Let's take the streets and see if we can spot him. I'm sure he's long gone by now. If the guy's smart, he's halfway to Jersey. So, you never joined the Freemasons or the Shriners?
Shriners, please.
I understand they do good work for children.
I've never been a follower, Anya.
What about Rue? You followed him.
He was my master. The kindest thing he ever called me was apprentice. I did what I was told and wisely kept my distance from his backhand.
But he taught you things. You owe him a debt.
What dream are you living in, woman? I owe nothing to that man. We are bound together through a bizarre destiny, but that doesn't mean we are brothers or family.
Sorry. Suppose I won't get a Christmas card from you and Rue, then? No family picture?
Anya sensed Garin's smile, but he looked out the driver's side window.
Speaking of pictures, you look great nude.
Anya gaped.
Don't worry, Anya. I know it's not you.
How?
You forget I know your bra size. And the assets in that picture were silicone, I'm sure. You, I can only imagine, are all natural.
Anya decided to leave that one alone. Silver flashed in her peripheral view. Squinting, Anya made out a very familiar box tucked under the arm of a tall, thin man walking swiftly down the sidewalk. It wasn't Sergei, but that was the original box she had found the skull in.
That's him.
You're sure?
It's not the Bone Conjurer, but that is the skull. I'm sure of it. You drive. I'm going on foot. Can you keep close?
No problem. Go get him.
Anya sprinted down the sidewalk. A good 200 feet ahead of her, the man turned. The small case the skull had been enclosed in swung out in his grip. He saw her and took off in a run. He dodged right, disappearing from view. Taking the turn that led into a long, narrow alley, which opened onto some kind of building yard enclosed by chain-link fencing, that didn't stop the man. He expertly mounted the fence and swung himself over. She landed in a crouch. The man ran toward a warehouse. Garin's Escalade pulled up behind the fence as Anya entered the warehouse. It was late. Moonlight cast across the floor at the far wall, but where Anya stood, the atmosphere was hazy at best. Scattered lumber and plastic-covered pallets stood everywhere. The dusty smell of sheetrock clued her to a stack of whiteboard to her right. Before her on the hardwood floor, smeared shoe tracks advertised the murderer's intentions. He'd gone right. Garin entered with pistol held before him and a keen eye to the surroundings. Anya nodded, acknowledging the trail by pointing it out. He nodded left and gestured for her to go right. She dashed between two stacks of lumber piled 3 feet higher than her head. The building must be a lumber warehouse. She slunk along a wall of lumber, her shoulders tracing the clean edges, and crept to the end of the stack. Stepping forward to the next aisle of stacked lumber, she dodged a look down the aisle. Empty. Putting her back to the next stack of lumber, she guessed he was down the aisle. Anya spun her hips and turned her body to stand in the aisle. The man turned and fled down the aisle away from her. Anya pursued. In the narrow aisle, she couldn't call the sword to her, but as soon as she exited the first row and spotted the man's coattails, she did summon it. Anya heard the fight before she saw it. Coming to an abrupt stop at the edge of stacked sheetrock, she lowered the sword. Anya scanned the floor. Garin's gun lay against a stack of lumber, 30 feet from where the men fought. Something slid away from the clash of testosterone, the case containing the skull. It came to a wobbling stop against a 2x4.
You're just going to watch?
The man landed 3 feet from where Anya stood. She tapped him on the skull with the sword's tip.
My turn, big boy. You up for taking me on?
She allowed him to roll over and jump to his feet. The man eyed the sword curiously. He spread out his arms, not a position of preparation, but of surrender.
I don't normally fight chicks, but I'll give it a go. Would you fight an unarmed man?
She tipped the sword up under his chin.
I hardly believe you would walk about unarmed. Don't have another guitar string handy?
He lifted his hands slowly to place palms out near his shoulders. Anya kept the sword tip under his chin. A twist of her wrist pressed it into his neck above the Adam's apple. Flesh opened and blood beaded. A shallow cut.
Don't know what you're talking about, Toots. Watch the blade. Where'd a sexy thing like you get a badass weapon like that? Someone's gonna get hurt with that thing.
You must be that someone. Who are you? You work for Sergei?
Sergei? Lady, I was just taking a casual stroll, then you came along.
I'm not buying your lies. You took the skull from Professor Danziger after you killed him.
Well, I never heard of no professor. As you can tell, I never went to no college.
Keep him there, Anya.
The hairs on the back of Anya's neck prickled at Garin's voice. She hadn't been paying attention to him. Now he stood behind her, where the skull case had landed. Garin had the skull and tossed it once in his hand.
This is mine.
Anya spun, sweeping the sword around.
You're not going anywhere, Garin.
Her head snapped up as a heavy weight squeezed her throat. The murderer clamped an arm around her neck. Even swinging the sword backward, she couldn't connect with the bastard. To attempt a slice at his leg would first cut her own.
I'll break her neck!
Garin held the skull before him to look it over. His long fingers stroked the cranium and traced along the gold.
Let me think about that one. The girl for the skull of Sidon?
The man tightened his hold, compressing Anya's carotid artery.
That's your choice, buddy. She's a fine piece of work.
Anya's vision blurred. Her fingers loosened around the sword grip. Whether or not the murderer noticed the disappearance of the sword, he didn't give a clue. She clasped her fingers, trying to fit them around a solid hilt.
You're not very smart, are you? If you had had a better grip on your sniper, you'd have had this prize days ago.
The man lifted Anya's body a few inches, but loosened his grip somewhat.
What sniper? Don't know what you're talking about, man.
But Anya did. The sniper who had killed Marcus Cook.
I got to him just as he pulled the trigger. He was going to take out my girl after the first guy.
Anya's eyelids fluttered. Garin had been with the sniper. He'd saved her life.
If she's your girl, then you'll be wanting her breathing. Hand it over!
Garin turned the skull so the eye sockets faced Anya and her attacker.
You should have offered to trade for her sword. That would have got you this thing in an instant.
The sword! Where'd it go?
Exactly. Too bad, you lose.
Garin held the skull from his outstretched arm. Garin raced across the snowy tarmac in the Escalade. One hand on the wheel and navigating the tight street, he held the skull in the other.
Ha! Maybe the second time will be the charm.
He'd heard groans as he'd run out the warehouse door. Still alive, then. This time, the skull hadn't murdered. It had been a risk to hold it before Anya, knowing it could bring her death. But Garin had felt deep down it wouldn't harm her. She was not his enemy, no matter how she felt about that.
She's got the sword. She'll be fine.
Sergei got out of the cab at the curb in front of Skirmerhorn Hall. He wouldn't attempt to stride up the sidewalk. Half a dozen squad cars flashed blue and red lights across the darkening winter sky. Sergei felt a lingering sense of power close by. Not active, but remnants. As if a great force had been utilized. Not on this campus, though. The sensation made him scan north. Perhaps less than a mile. The intuitive feeling meant someone had beaten him to the skull. And they'd used it already. Across the street, he spied a familiar figure standing outside a dark-windowed BMW. His attention was on the commotion as well. Sergei sped across the street. He grabbed Harris by the collar and slammed him against the car.
Where is it?
I know you, and I know I don't work for you, so let go of me.
Swinging the man around, Sergei slapped his palm to the back of his scalp and slammed him down. Harris's face dented the top of the car. Hands gripping the edge of the car, he strained as Sergei attempted to force his face again into the metal. He was strong.
You're insane! If you're looking for the skull, I don't have it.
Where is it?
In the hands of the NYPD. Look, the cops are everywhere. My guy is still inside, getting cuffed, I'm sure.
A dribble of blood pooled on the dented hood. Sergei sensed Harris was telling the truth. If he had the skull, he wouldn't remain on the scene when the cops were swarming.
You going after him?
You nuts? Oh, that's right, you are. Ravenscroft says you talk to spirits.
Sergei calmed himself. If he knocked Harris unconscious, he wouldn't be able to tell him anything else.
You intend to bail him out?
That's not my call.
Ravenscroft.
Yes, but I'm sure he'll play it cool. Why are you after this thing? Ravenscroft won't like hearing I had this unpleasant conversation with you.
Sergei reached inside his coat and palmed the bone biopsy tool.
Tell him what you want. The skull is mine.
Not according to Ravenscroft.
The tool passed neatly through flesh and the scaphoid bone at the base of Harris's right thumb. Sergei tugged him down against the car door and withdrew the tool as he did so. He dropped Harris near the rear tire. He had passed out. Inside his pocket, he carried a small plastic bag. He placed the tool inside and pocketed it. He decided to track the skull's latent spirit trail. If it was possible, he might be able to trace it to whoever held it. But he had to work quickly. Already, the chill air dulled his awareness of the skull. As Anya pushed a board off her shoulder, pain seared through her hip. A good number of 2x4s had landed on her shoulders, but she hadn't felt the impact completely because the murderer's body had blocked the initial blows, and then she'd blacked out. Dragging herself from the scatter of lumber, she pushed with her toe against something with give. Then she remembered she wasn't alone. Clearing the boards, she gripped her hip and stood at a forward-leaning angle to counteract the pain. Professor Danziger's murderer lay beneath the boards. As she scanned the length of his body, she saw one of his fingers twitch. Time to call in the cavalry.
Anya, I'm at Skirmahorn Hall.
You found the professor's body?
Yes, and we're dusting for fingerprints now. Please tell me yours will not turn up in the mix.
I hope not. I did use his computer.
Anya?
Bart, before you go off on me, I'm standing over the professor's murderer right now. I followed him from the scene of the crime.
I wish you'd called me earlier, Anya.
So did she. Maybe this was one of those times when she needed to step up and say, I need help. Anya tipped him under the chin with the point of the sword.
Stay.
What?
Yeah, not you, Bart. I'm in a warehouse about 6 blocks north of the university. It looks like new construction, maybe a lumber warehouse. I've got your man. We found the skull on him, stolen from the professor.
We?
Me and a...
Most definitely not a friend. She'd mentioned Garin to Bart before, but she had never explained their complicated relationship, or that he was immortal.
Will you just come over here, Bart?
Is the suspect conscious?
Not for long.
Anya was relieved when Bart came alone. He made it clear he wanted to call this in immediately. The NYPD was up the street at the college. It wouldn't look right if he waited to tell them about this discovery. Anya led him to the guy sprawled on the floor. Bart didn't know about the sword. She'd knocked out the murderer, so she didn't have to reveal how, exactly. She'd kept him at bay until the cavalry did arrive. Bart cuffed the unconscious man. With the thug secure, Bart holstered his gun under his arm and led Anya to the open warehouse door. He spoke into his radio, explaining he'd followed a perp to the warehouse. Anya felt his breath on her neck before she realized he stood so close.
Need another one of those hugs?
Now was no time to go all mushy and start wondering what Bart's hugs implied.
I can't stick around.
I don't expect you to. Not sure if I want you to. But I'm still a cop, and I have to follow some procedure. Where's the skull? You don't have it? What is going on, Anya?
I'm not sure, Bart. There's something about this skull that makes men kill for it. First the thief at the bridge, and now the professor. He was such a nice guy. Can't believe I was responsible for his death.
How could you be responsible? You couldn't have known someone would go after the skull.
I could have. I shouldn't have left it with Danziger after Sergei tracked me to my loft.
Sergei? Tracked you to your loft?
Anya dropped her raised hands and turned from Bart's eyes.
Anya?
Yesterday, I returned home from the university to find a stranger waiting for me. My place was trashed. He was looking for the skull.
Bart swiped a hand over his jaw and fixed her with a stare she wouldn't wish on the hardest of criminals. He had a way of looking at her without saying a word that made her feel as if he could read her thoughts.
I didn't want to upset you. Sergei is a necromancer.
A what?
A guy who talks to spirits with bones.
Anya considered pushing up Bart's chin to close his mouth, but she wasn't rude, and she didn't want to rile him any more than he already was.
Do I need to go in for questioning?
You should, but I don't know if I want my co-workers to hear the tale you have to tell. Necromancers and gold skulls? What is this, an Indiana Jones movie?
It's not a tale.
I believe you, Anya, but let's keep the creepy skull stuff for the television show, okay? I'll arrest this guy and match his prints at the scene of the crime. It'll be simple murder and artifact theft, only we haven't got an artifact to prove it.
I'm working on that.
You know where it is?
I have an idea.
But you're not going to tell me. Maybe I do need to bring you in for questioning, if only because it'll keep you safe.
I know the guy who took it. Remember I mentioned Garin Braden to you a while back?
I remember the name. He helped you out of one of those adventurous, bullet-dodging situations you tend to find yourself in so often. Such as now. You've dodged bullets and the adventure level is pretty high. He's helping you again?
Yes. Not really. I don't know. Listen, Bart, give me a day to go after him and see what's up.
Let me come along.
Too risky.
Then I'm not letting you go.
Bart tugged handcuffs from his belt.
Bart, if you arrest me, you'll have to name me as a suspect.
It's just protective custody, Anya.
Let me do this, Bart. You know I can take care of myself.
Actually, I don't know that. You've given me the call more times than I can count, and each time I sit wondering, teeth clenched and feeling helpless. This has to stop. I know you've got the self-defense moves, but you're not a superhero, Anya.
Never said I was.
So don't do this one on your own. Let me help you.
I'm not in any danger. Garin wouldn't harm me. He's a friend.
Not really. But Anya would never escape the handcuffs unless she convinced Bart that going after Garin was less perilous than it really was.
Anya, why do you have to do this?
I knew Professor Danziger. Let me go after Garin. I just want to talk to him before it's too late and he's done something with the skull.
Where does he live?
Here in Manhattan. The cops are almost here, please. Bart, I'll stay in touch.
Bart leaned back and tucked the handcuffs in his pocket.
I'll check in tomorrow morning. Promise.
If you don't, I'll be sitting on your doorstep waiting for you.
Deal.
Anya kissed his cheek. It wasn't an intimate kiss, but it felt pretty deep. Like some kind of promise she was afraid to keep.
Talk soon.
Garin set the skull on the glass coffee table with the eye sockets facing away from him. It didn't take a genius to understand that's how the thing worked.
It's been a long time.
He reclined on the couch and tapped through the contact numbers in his cell phone. His client expected discretion and would receive it. He'd not gained a reputation for being trustworthy in the company he kept for no reason. It was 2 a.m. in the country he wanted to call. Garin thought better than waking the client. The news could wait another 6 hours. He put up his feet on the coffee table near the skull and closed his eyes. Maybe he'd keep this apartment. It had initially been a place to park while he'd brokered the deal. But he did like this city. It had potential. And Anya lived close by.
I've so much to learn about you, Anya Creed.
Anya had thought for sure Sergei would go after the professor for the skull. If he hadn't tracked the skull to Columbia, then she had no idea who had. Sergei had been unaware of the sniper. There was another party involved in this mess Anya knew nothing about.
Benjamin Ravenscroft. Sergei mentioned him, as did Garin. Who is that guy? Is he the guy I'm after? Or was he the thug Bart arrested?
Anya would have liked to sit in on the questioning at the police station, but she would do well to stay away from any buildings with bars and cells. Bart was worried about her. She could handle herself fine. She gave Bart a lot of credit for not taking her into custody. The first place Sergei would probably look for her was her loft. She could go to Garin's apartment and wrestle the skull from him, but right now the best idea was to regroup and think through her options. At least she was close to home, on familiar ground, and just far enough from Bart that he would not try to follow her. Walking the sidewalks before a stretch of family cafes and shops, Anya dug out her cell phone. Tugging her hood over her head kept the wet snow from soaking through, but she would be completely wet in 10 minutes or less. Her first instinct was to call Rue, but she nixed that and instead called Bart.
You gonna take the guy in for questioning?
Yes, but any conversation I have with him will be kept in strictest confidence.
I'll give you all the information I have, which isn't much.
Talk.
The day I brought the skull to Professor Danziger, I returned home to find a guy waiting for me in my loft.
Yes, you told me.
His name is Sergei.
Sergei who?
I don't have a last name. I think he's Russian, if that helps.
You know it doesn't. What kind of trouble are you in, Anya? Is this Sergei guy after you?
Not this second.
Anya...
I don't mean to make you worry, but it's good to know someone does. Will you call me if you get more info on the perp?
Don't use cop words like that, Anya.
Sorry, the suspect. Also, I have another name. Benjamin Ravenscroft.
It sounds familiar.
It does?
Yeah, but I'm not sure why.
Is it the guy from the warehouse?
We'll know soon enough.
Talk to you soon, Bart. Thanks.
Anya turned and scanned across the street for a place to sit and have a cup of coffee. Suddenly, she needed food and warmth, a place to puzzle out her thoughts. Inside the restaurant, Anya navigated to a corner booth with the shades drawn over the windows. Depositing her backpack on the opposite seat, she climbed into the booth and put her spine to the wall, knees drawn to her chest. She ordered coffee. A framed black-and-white photograph of Carlo Gambino, the Mafia Don, hung on the wall behind her. The glass was cracked, but the autograph looked real.
Friends in strange places.
Anya thought briefly of Garin and his on-again, off-again pseudo-friendship with her. He'd hug her, then stab her in the back and sink her in the river wearing cement shoes, just like a mobster, if given the motivation. There were half a dozen patrons in the restaurant, and the heat blasted like a Sahara wind. It felt great. So she sat, alone, without the skull. At least Sergei didn't have it, or Benjamin Ravenscroft, whoever he was. But Garin did. After his tale of the power it possessed and watching innocents die in the 15th century, she thought for sure he wouldn't want to again wield such a wicked power, and yet he'd brazenly used it against her. Anya rubbed her hip. Nothing was broken, but she'd find a bruise there later. Probably bruises on her elbows and ribs, too. As well, her wrist still ached, and she was feeling in sorry shape. Anya crossed her arms over her chest and hunched down farther until the back of her head rested on the torn vinyl booth. She'd never felt so alone, and she felt it in every ache and cut on her body. She wanted to go home and crawl between the sheets. It would be great if someone was at home waiting, with arms open to give her a much-needed, you-tried-your-best-kiddo hug. She'd never had one of those before, but had often imagined what it would be like.
Not gonna happen in this lifetime, Creed. Deal with it.
CNN played on the plasma television mounted on the meeting room wall. Well, after midnight, Ben wasn't close to leaving the office for the day. It wasn't his turn to tuck in Rachel, so he wasn't bothered by the late hour. A burgeoning migraine gave no regard to the time either. He should take his medication. Already he was beginning to see spots before him, gray holes in his vision. Though the TV was on, the sound was off. He couldn't see the newscaster's face unless he blinked. That granted momentary relief from the visual spots. The crawl across the bottom of the CNN broadcast flashed a breaking news story. Ben squinted to read it. A professor at Columbia University had been found dead. He had taught in the sociology and anthropology department and was the rock star of the campus. He had been garroted with a guitar string. Ben pressed two fingers to his temple and rubbed at the sting pulsing in his head.
I should have taken care of this myself from the start.
He'd always believed it best to leave the dirty work to others. Benjamin Ravenscroft was a known public entity. He couldn't afford a slip-up, or to be connected to anything immoral or just plain dirty. Not that he didn't positively drool to get his hands on the inept and smash their faces into a brick wall. He slammed a fist on the conference table. Anger bled through his veins, pulsing with each squeezing grip at his temple. Shoving aside the pile of mail he'd been going through, Ben picked up the letter opener. The headache gripped more fiercely. He squeezed the thin staff of steel. If he was home, Linda would touch him, ease away the pain. No longer. Once Linda had nursed his headaches, leading him into the dark bedroom and pressing a cool cloth over his pulsing brow. Gentle touches reassured, made him know that, even though he could not speak for the pain, she was there. But Linda hadn't touched him since Rachel's diagnosis. She couldn't speak to him in anything less than a scream. She blamed him for all their troubles, for Rachel's sickness, for his headaches, for the maid quitting after the dog bit her. She would blame him for the housing crisis if she could. He was just trying to take care of his family in the only manner he knew, by hard work and by investigating all means to curing his daughter. Ben had to prove to Linda he was not the man she thought he was. He would win back her love, her welcoming smile and gentle touch. A twinge of red pain struck his temple. Ben cringed, leaning over the table. Gripping the letter opener, he was about to stab the stack of officious charity requests. Like a guilty child trying to hide the evidence, Ben swung the letter opener behind his back. He'd never escape the guilt of his own ineptitude, his inability to make the world right for those he loved the most. He could sell air, for Christ's sake, but he couldn't save his own flesh and blood.
What is it?
Harris stepped inside, pushing the door with a careful hand.
Sorry to bother you so late, boss. There's no one here, so I let myself in. You okay, boss?
Just a headache. Your man finished the job. Apparently he did. I saw the news. So where is it?
Harris rubbed a palm over his knuckles. A bruise near his left temple looked fresh.
There was a snafu.
Snafu?
If the operation was going to fall apart around him, Ben needed to stop it before it bled out, had to contain the damage. Like his pulsing migraine, it threatened to explode. His knuckles tightened around the letter opener.
The police were called. Jones was arrested.
You kept my name out of the deal, I expect?
Of course, Mr. Ravenscroft. I never use names with my men, but the skull.
Let me guess. No skull. But why should I expect success from you?
Jones had the skull. He called me for pickup. Said he was being chased.
By the police?
No, by some woman. Then he was cut off. I didn't get there until the police had arrived. I stayed out of sight while they made the arrest.
Ben stabbed the table with the letter opener. The high-gloss mahogany cracked.
A woman?!
Clinging to the shaft of steel, Ben pressed his free palm to the table's slick surface. He could not look at Harris. The gray spots had multiplied.
Would that be Anya Creed? That same slender bit of a woman who managed to fall from a bridge and not die, as you would have me believe? Wonder how she managed to rise from the dead and then to chase down Jones and slip away with the skull?
She must be working for Marcus.
The thief? I don't think so. I tracked their emails online. She had no clue who he was or what artifact he had before they met. Despite his duality to me, Cook was careful not to reveal his identity.
Maybe Sergei?
Ben swung upright, the letter opener tearing slivers of wood.
Sergei?
He gave me this! He was on the scene, trying to find Creed.
Ben hadn't considered the connection, but it was possible. It would surprise him, though, if Sergei had made a friend, and one so gorgeous and famous as Anya Creed.
So Creed took off with the skull?
No, some man got it.
Some man? Not Sergei, not Creed, but some person you don't even have a name for? How many people know about this skull?
Harris tugged at his tie.
Sorry, Mr. Ravenscroft. Jones texted me from the warehouse just before the police nabbed him. Said a strange man took off with the skull. He said that the skull did something to him.
Tapping the tip of the letter opener against his chin, Ben slid a leg along the table. Tightening his jaw, he closed his eyes.
Did something?
It was like a hurricane, but inside the warehouse. The other man held it up, and it blew Jones and the Creed woman from their feet.
This was incredible to learn. So the skull of Sidon did possess powers. But Ben wasn't sure what good it did to blow two people away and not kill them. Unless it was a good thing to the man who now possessed the skull. Perhaps the individual bearer determined exactly what goodness could be reaped from the skull.
Were they together, do you think? Creed and the other man? Did you get his name?
No name, but yes, they were initially together. But I think he left her behind.
You think?
Ben looked up at Harris, but his vision was littered by blurry gray spots. Nauseous, Ben winced at the command the migraine had over him.
I wasn't going to get too close to the warehouse. Cops, remember?
And you lost her?
Are you sure you're okay, boss?
Yes! You didn't follow the woman?
There were cops all over.
Perhaps she left with the police. Did they take her into custody?
Couldn't tell. I was busy getting the hell out of there. Whoa. Hey, now, boss.
Ben tossed the letter opener in the air and caught it, wielding it like a blade before him. The migraine threatened to fell Ben to his knees. Going fetal was always a last resort, and not the image he wished to convey to this man.
Harris, you're fired.
But, sir...
He could not see the man's face at all now, but he didn't need to. Controlled by pain, Ben flinched his tightened muscles. The letter opener slid neatly into Harris's skull through his nasal cavity. Ben slapped a hand over Harris's mouth. Shoving the man against the wall, Ben pushed hard, pushing away his own pain, murdering it. Ben twisted and was able to cut the blade through the interior. His entire body pressed along Harris's body. Ben felt the man's muscles contract. Harris dropped, dragging jelly fingers down the front of Ben's shirt. There was very little blood from the hemorrhaging brain. Dropping the letter opener on the stack of discarded envelopes, Ben stepped away from the damage. His neck flushed with warmth. He lifted his hands to study them. He saw clearly. No blood, yet his fingers shook. Heartbeats pounded with unrelenting vehemence. He hadn't noticed his heartbeat at all while committing the violence. Now he could not hear beyond it.
I didn't.
But he had. He'd killed a man. It had been so easy, natural. The pain had transferred from his skull, through his fingers, and away from his body. He tugged his foot from under Harris's leg. Thick fluid oozed out the nose and over the man's parted mouth. The head, tilted forward onto his chest, would keep the blood from dripping onto the floor. Ben scrubbed fingers through his hair and tugged hard. It alleviated some muscle tightness. The headache had moved to the back of his scalp, just a dull pulse now.
What the hell? I have to get rid of this.
Now was no time to panic. It was too late for regret. He must know someone who could take this away. Move the body without anyone noticing.
What do they call people like that? Cleaners.
Ben stumbled, tripping over Harris's hand. He caught himself against the boardroom table and pressed his face to it. Ben slumped onto the chair. He collapsed forward, arms folding in and head bowing. A glance over his shoulder checked Harris's face. Still no excess blood. He hadn't noticed when it happened, but his blurred vision had cleared. There was a man who would know the right people, and it was not Sergei. 10 minutes later, Ben had been promised a cleaner would arrive within the hour. Stepping over Harris's body, he dragged the door closed behind him. He had to tug. The body had slumped and blocked the door. Harris's ear bent awkwardly. The door dragged flesh, but finally it closed. He phoned his secretary at home.
I was thinking we'd head for the Jumeirah. I want to relax tonight on some luxurious sheets with room service. How does that sound to you?
You spoil me, Ben. Shall I give the hotel a call?
I'll meet you in the lobby in an hour. I've got some tidying up to do here and a last-minute phone call with a client in Tokyo time.
Shall I order champagne?
champagne to celebrate his first murder.
Why the hell not?
Garin strode to the front door and wondered for a moment if it would be Anya on the other side. It should be, unless she hadn't gotten away from the murderer in the warehouse.
Garin!
Grimacing, Garin opened the door and Rue charged through, looking like a silver-screen star with white hair that clashed with his tan skin and sunglasses perched on his head. Rue marched into the living room where Garin had left the skull on the coffee table. Rue snatched the skull with a swift hand. He turned on Garin furiously.
So this is what you're after now. I thought I'd seen the last of this thing 5 centuries ago.
I'll take that, old man.
Garin slapped the bottom of Rue's hand, popping the skull into the air. He snatched the small cranium like a basketball and tucked it against his chest.
What brings you to New York? The European women growing stale for you?
I could ask the same of you. You never went in for American women.
I've always enjoyed women. Any nationality will suit.
The old man's eyes scanned the room. His expression indicated he was not impressed.
So, that's why you bought this place? New hunting grounds to stalk?
It's a rental. But you didn't come here to inspect the decor or marvel over the great deal I got for it.
I don't care what you spend your money on. Unless it swipes a sweet deal out from under me. How did you manage to win that auction in Brussels? I had 2 buyers to ensure the Fabergé egg would be mine.
That was you at the Brussels auction? I had no idea I was bidding against you. But thanks for telling me. Makes the win all the sweeter.
Rue bristled and cast a glance out the window, down toward the park. He was not here for a pleasant chat. His entire frame was stiff, strung tightly.
Where's Anya?
In an involuntary attempt not to mirror the man, Garin's shoulders relaxed. He swung out an arm.
You expect to find her here, in my home? I know you distrust me, Rue, but to suspect that Anya and I would...
You used her to find that damned necromancer's nightmare, then ditched her, didn't you?
Garin gave the skull a spinning toss. When he'd wielded the skull toward his opponents, it had given him good things. The defeat of the opposition, and an ability to escape cleanly. He kissed the skull's overlarge cranium.
It is a sweet little thing.
You forget your lesson so easily, Garin.
And you think everything that happens to a man is a lesson. Some things happen for no other reason than that's what was supposed to be. No lesson, no greater meaning. That's it, Rue. I've got the prize, and you don't. So, I'll be seeing you.
The old man raised a brow. Over the years, they'd developed a balance of power between them neither could ever be satisfied with, but which both tolerated. There was no love lost between the two of them. Rue had taken Garin on as an apprentice when he was a teenager, more like a slave. Though he'd not been beaten over much, Rue had certainly held the teenage Garin in fear for his life should he disobey a command. His master had been rumored to be a wizard, and that frightened Garin into compliance for a good many years. Garin had escaped from Rue at first opportunity. Fortunately for him, he'd gained immortality before that escape.
Did you take a look at the sword while you were with Anya?
I did, as it was sweeping threateningly before my eyes. The woman owns the thing, you know. It's like an extension of her now. It is a wonder to witness.
Garin had not, in his endless lifetime, met a woman who intrigued him so thoroughly.
And when you could not get her to hand it over to you, you took the skull instead. Didn't you learn a lesson the first time we encountered that monstrous thing?
That was your mistake, old man.
There is no way to control that abomination. Unless it now has an instruction manual.
Get over it. I won this fair and square. There was a 3-way battle, and I emerged the victor.
3? Don't tell me the Bone Conjurer was in the mix.
Garin glanced out the window. He didn't want Rue in on this one. The man would be better to walk away and leave the dangerous bit of cranium to him.
Well?
You asked me not to tell you. Make up your mind, old man.
You are as old as I, so do not toss about the unremarkable moniker. What did Sergei do to Anya?
It was not a conjurer, but a thug who worked for an unknown entity. Anya didn't have a clue who he was.
But Garin did. He'd yet to meet Benjamin Ravenscroft, but he might before he left New York. Opportunity was rattling at his door, and he was just too curious not to crack it open for a peek. As for his original client, well, a little bidding war always sweetened any deal.
You make me wonder about your attachment to the woman, Rue. Just when I've begun to think you've a sort of father-daughter thing going on, you surprise me with intense concern for Anya's well-being. Do you love her?
You are an idiot, Garin.
Garin and his nemesis crashed into the coffee table, dropping them to the floor in a spray of safety glass. Garin felt the hard metal shape of a gun against Rue's chest. He dug in and palmed the pistol. Trigger finger curling, he knelt over the man, aiming at his head.
Go ahead. The blood will spatter your wet carpeting.
I care nothing about the decor.
The old man glanced aside. The skull sat out of reach, on its side, just behind a leather chair. The eye sockets faced them. Garin winced. It had to be held to work. He hoped.
The good things that skull gives are born of evil.
Garin stood, his aim still on Rue's head.
Listen to you. Aren't you the one who recently obtained the Devil's Jade? That thing is evil incarnate.
I don't use it, I just admire it.
Oh? Well, I've got some admiring to do with the skull. Oh,
you think it'll get you the sword?
Jaw pulsing, Garin didn't answer. This time, he was wrong.
You think I need a magical skull to get the sword? You know nothing. If I wanted it, I could take it from her.
No, you can't. The sword belongs to Anya. If she doesn't want you to have it, it's gone. Like that.
I have my means.
Seduction will only get you so far with Anya. She's not your average female. If you don't want the sword, then what?
That's my business, old man.
Don't hurt her. Not for your benefit.
Garin tilted his head. The accusation he would harm Anya cut to his bones. Suddenly, Rue kicked out. Garin's back hit the couch arm. Sergei entered Ben's office. An immediate wash of agony chilled over his flesh. He felt as if worms were crawling across his skin. He'd felt this way once before. The man who had given him the feeling was now in jail, serving life for murder.
Sergei.
Sergei craned his neck left and right to snap away the awful sensation, but it would not leave. Ben sat on the leather chair behind the desk, feet propped up.
You summoned me?
Yes, but not for the usual business.
I am not indebted to you beyond summoning for your business, Mr. Ravenscroft.
Yes, yes. Come closer. I simply want to chat with you. See how the world is treating you. It's been, what, more than a year since you've come to America. You like the apartment?
Gritting his teeth against the foul aura spilling off the man, Sergei cautioned himself against looking about the room. Always he wanted to remain calm and centered when in Benjamin Ravenscroft's presence.
We had this conversation.
True. We didn't finish it. How is your family getting along?
The word family stabbed Sergei in the heart. It was hard to hide that hit. And Benjamin wielded it as expertly as any prize fighter's fist.
I spoke to my father 2 weeks ago. He is healthy, as are the rest of my family members. My father sends his thanks to my patron.
Ah. Well then, do return my best wishes to them the next time you speak. I'm all for keeping the family ties strong. A man isn't whole without his family, yes?
Sergei nodded. Since leaving his family, he had indeed felt broken. Not whole. But he was making a life of his own. Slowly, tediously. His father was proud of him. Living in the big city. Working for a prestigious client. Sergei sent money every other week. It put food on his family's table and clothes on their backs, and allowed his father a little extra to save for the new tractor required to till the land. He would never allow his family to know the sacrilege he committed against the ancient craft he'd been born into. Necromancy was an esteemed art, innate in the practitioner. Once his mother decided Sergei's tendency to talk to the others was a manifestation of that art, she had him tutored alongside the best necromancer in Odessa.
And you, how is your family?
Ben's eyelid twitched. Sergei knew family was the man's Achilles heel. So they shared the same weakness. He needed to show he could deliver the blow as well as Ben. This match would not be won with a knockout, but rather with finesse.
My family isn't your concern, Sergei.
Just trying to be polite, Mr. Ravenscroft. You don't require my services today, then. Just a friendly chat.
Let's shove the bull out the window, shall we?
Ravenscroft stood. His dark shirt was unbuttoned at the wrists, and the cuffs were rolled back. He flipped his medium-length hair from one eye and pressed forward onto his fingers over the desk.
I know what you want, Sergei. And I believe you know what I want, too.
A loaded statement. Sergei would be foolish to convince himself Ben was unaware he'd been tracking the skull. Hell, he'd accosted the man last evening. The news probably made it to Ravenscroft before Harris returned to the nest. He'd been less than careful, frustrated. The cards had been laid out. There was still a risk in revealing himself, but he didn't have the skull in hand and was losing options quickly.
Why did you arrange to have it brought here? How did you learn of it?
That's better. Finally, we're talking.
Ben strolled around and perched on the edge of the desk, crossing his arms over his chest. He lifted the end of a letter opener on the desk, twirled it back and forth, then set it down carefully.
I met the man who owns the artifact a few weeks ago. He showed it to me and explained its legend. Fascinating.
And you believed in the legend?
How could I not? I believe in a man who can commune with the dead, bring great riches to my accounts, and annihilate my competition with a mere suggestion. A magical skull, an easy leap. What I want to know is how you knew I was having it brought here.
That he kept tabs on Ben through the spirits was not information Sergei wished to divulge.
I suspect you have your ways, yes? It's not prudent to wield control over the man who puts coin in your pocket, Sergei. In essence, you've been spying on me.
Not spying. I am simply alert to entities that accompany my profession.
Entities? That's an interesting way of putting it. Spirits spying for you? Have they been following me about? Don't answer. I don't even want to know. It's weird enough when you conjure in the next room. I feel so unclean after you leave.
Really? More so than now? This skull can mean little to you. It is not a tool to be used by inexperienced hands. It can bring great calamity as opposed to the goodness it promises. What does it mean to you?
Do you know what power that thing possesses, Sergei?
I do.
Ben leaned forward.
Then you tell me what you think it can do for me. Let's see if we're on the same page.
I'd prefer hearing your rendition of its legendary powers, if you don't mind.
Ben smirked. Leaning backward over the desk, he pulled out the top drawer. Sliding aside the contents, which Sergei was unable to see, he then pulled out a single photograph. He waved it before him.
Nice-looking family, Sergei.
Taken on the eve of the day Sergei had said goodbye to his mother, father, and two sisters. Written on the back were their address, the location of his sister's schools, and the hours his father worked. No doubt Ben kept copies on encrypted computer files as well. That night, in a limo, he'd left with Ben Ravenscroft's valet, who had escorted him to the airport and paid for his flight to the States. To begin a new life, to start a journey that would see him financially sound and able to support his parents and siblings. He had been naive and open to Ben's wide-eyed visions for Sergei's future. New York was a city that welcomed one and all. Sergei would love it. He would have his own apartment, a car, fine things, whatever he desired. Ben would make it happen. And in return, Sergei would pledge his summoning skills completely to Ben. He would help Ben do good things, finance charities, build his business, and create jobs for many. Or so he had promised. The smell of wrongful death gushing from Ben's body renewed Sergei's determination. He would have that skull, and his liberty from this bastard. His family must be free from Ravenscroft's vicious threats, once and for all.